The March state revenue forecast came in this week. Now the state legislature begins in earnest its biggest challenge, drawing up a budget in the face of large budget shortfalls and a Supreme Court mandate that lawmakers put more money into K-12 education. Our Olympia correspondent, the Northwest News Network's Austin Jenkins, joins us to talk about the week in the state capitol. Austin, thank you.
Happy Friday, Ross.
Representative Ross Hunter, the House's lead budget writer, said that the budget forecast takes a bad problem and does not make it worse. But it's still a challenge, isn't it?
It is still a challenge. And really what happened, to get a little wonky on you, is that the revenue forecast was basically flat. There's a caseload forecast that comes out about a week prior, and that kind of became the headline grabber because it showed that Medicaid spending was going up or not going down as much as they thought it would. That was about a $300 million hit. That's big, serious money down here. So right now, the legislature and the governor are looking at about a $1.2 or $1.3 billion shortfall for the next two-year budget.
Now, there have been rumblings in the legislature about possible tax increases to both meet the challenge of the budget shortfalls and also the challenge of putting this money into K-12 education. Any more on that since the forecast came out this week?
Well, we're still waiting to see budget proposals. The Senate is going to go first, and that could happen next week or maybe early the following week. And I don't expect that there will be a sort of revenue component to this. What Republicans are saying is there's going to be $2 billion in additional funds, additional revenue to work with in this next two-year budget. That should be sufficient to solve the state's problems and start to fund McCleary. Democrats, though, and Ross Hunter is certainly leading the charge in this, is saying he's looking at the numbers and says it really can't be done in a way that he thinks meets Washington values without looking to, at least in his mind, perhaps extending some expiring tax hikes or perhaps closing some tax exemptions. Nobody at this point, though, is talking about an across-the-board tax increase.
Austin, as we've been talking about this session, the new Republican-dominated majority in the state Senate has really been changing the rules and pushing forward a lot of new things. And reportedly, they're rethinking the standard budget assumptions that there will be automatic increases in spending just to keep up with programs that are out there. The new Republican budget chairman, Senator Andy Hill of Redmond, says that's not how a family budget works. How will that influence the debate?
Well, former Governor Gregoire was famous for saying very often that basically two-thirds of the budget is off-limits for tinkering. And she would make that case because she would use the example of, say, Medicaid, which is a 50-50 shared program. A dollar of state money, you get a dollar of federal money, and there's a lot of restrictions on messing with Medicaid. So she would say, look, the box I'm working in, the box from which I can derive savings, is pretty limited. Theoretically, a budget writer could go in and say everything's on the table, even if it means, for instance, giving up federal funds. Whether the Republican kind of led majority over there in the Senate is willing to go that route remains to be seen. But certainly, it's always that conversation of, is it a cut if you are cutting from an anticipated increase in spending, or is it, in fact, not a cut? And Republicans are trying to make the case that it's not a cut.
The Tacoma News Tribune columnist Peter Callahan this week wrote about the rules on why a bill is in trouble or dies for no apparent reason. He wrote, a bill is in trouble if the high-tech sector, like Microsoft, is against it. A bill dies for no apparent reason if Boeing opposes it. Peter Callahan's a pretty entertaining writer, but do you think he's right about that?
Well, and perhaps the same to kind of extrapolate further, you might be able to say that about labor unions. You might be able to say that about the trial lawyers who are also powerful interests in this town. I think that what Peter Callahan in his column was trying to get at was especially, this was around the drone bill, restricting how drones are used in this state. And Boeing has bought up a company down on the Columbia River that builds these things. And what Peter noted is that Boeing wasn't testifying on this bill in committee on TVW and making its opposition public. It was working behind the scenes and doing so apparently very effectively. Now, not to give anybody a pass on this, but there is a reality down here where you see bills that don't have all of the stakeholders buying in. And in this case, it's about, you know, regulating the use of drones. When there's somebody saying, hold on a second, we're not comfortable with this, it often happens that a bill like that dies and kind of gets put into a interim, we'll work on it, work on the details, and bring it back next year. There's no huge urgency. So this might be in that category. But are powerful interests in this state able to come down here in either on-camera or off-camera influence outcomes? That's no surprise.
Austin, this week, the increasingly poorly named Liquor Control Board hired a company to consult on how to legalize marijuana growth, processing, and sales in our state. based on the initiative passed by voters. And it's headed up by a man who wrote the book on it titled Marijuana Legalization, What Everybody Needs to Know. What happens next now that they have their consultant in place?
Well, you know what I find so fascinating about this is how technical it is, Ross. Here's a list of some of the things that that consulting team in its bid for this contract told the board will have to be addressed. Things like the maximum level of harmful contaminants in the marijuana itself. Statistical error tolerances for the measurement of active agents like THC. Certifications for the labs that are going to be testing the marijuana, an inspection process for those labs, a recall process for contaminated or mislabeled product. And keep in mind, they're not doing this with the help of the FDA. They got to do this all at the state level. So that's the kind of stuff that this group of consultants, if you will, is going to be working on. It's pretty technical in nature.
State legislatures come up with some pretty darn entertaining laws. Do you have a nomination for Goofy Law of the Week?
Well, this credit here goes to Jason Mercier of the Washington Policy Center, who is relentless in his frustration over something called title-only bills, title-only bills. And they come out about this time of year, and they say things, a bill gets introduced, and all it says is it's a blank piece of paper with a title that says something like relating to revenue, relating to education. These are placeholder bills that are introduced so that they don't get into a situation at the end of session where they have to, by constitution, introduce a bill 10 days before it is, I think, before final passage is how the Constitution talks about this. So they introduce these blank bills. And Jason Mercier notes that back in 2010, they even voted a blank bill out of a committee.
That's
so
wild.
It is wild.
They're like empty envelopes, and then later they put in what the law is going to say.
And then the question becomes, is there enough time for the public to be able to review sometimes they just skip the whole committee, the hearing process, and the budget basically gets dropped into these. They rush it out onto the floor. It'll sit there it might sit on the bar, so to speak, for a little bit of time. But, Jason Mercier is constantly saying that this is a process that goes too quickly at the end and that there's not enough light of day on it. And he thinks it starts with these title-only bills being introduced about this time of year.
Great. Thanks as always, Austin. We appreciate it.
You're welcome, Ross.
You hear Austin Jenkins reporting from Olympia for the Northwest News Network.